Good morning and welcome to Today. Kino Cummings with you all the way through. That's me, by the way. All the way through until midday. Coming up, the Housing Tribunal. Your rights as a landlord, the rights of a tenant, and then a bit of a sticky issue that was raised with the show yesterday. You'll be joined by Nathan Andreanza, who is he basically is the Department of Human Settlements Director of Communications and Stakeholder Relations, and the tribunal falls under the Western Cape Housing Department. And then we also going to have Marlon Chevalier, who is a property attorney at Marlon Chevalier and Associates. But that coming up. But before we do that, I thought we had a call. That one's just disappeared. Apologies for that. Now, you may have heard me take a call from a very upset listener who'd really, really had a bad experience with the Housing Tribunal, according to him. Mike from Takai raised some concerns about how the tribunal operates after he tried to get a tenant out of, to basically honor the lease agreement. Let's just take a listen to what he had to say. Because if you have a lease agreement, you say, well, you've got to give 1 month's notice. And if you only give 2 weeks' notice, then the problem with that is people are going to struggle to find tenants, and there is a material loss to the landlord, for example. But let's take a listen to his call.
Now, I've had a little issue with a rental tribunal. Mm. I've heard from my attorney that fighting these guys is like already kicking a can down the street. So, I'd like to expose them in any way I can. I'm doing that right now. What the issue is, and I'll be very brief, is to the lease, you give a month notice.
Yes.
Either way.
Yeah.
All right. She gave us 2 weeks. And we went to the rental tribunal. Obviously, she took us there because we wouldn't pay a deposit back. We lost a month in terms of trying to get a tenant in and what have you and what have you. Anyway, they passed the judgment. We didn't receive it, i.e. via email, which is what they said they would do. And at 6:30 on a particular morning, I had the sheriff of the court knocking on our door, making all sorts of threats and must make payments by within half an hour and all sorts of things. I honestly hadn't wiped the sleep out of my eyes. It had appeared, and I have evidence, that the rental tribunal, in fact, did not email their judgment call, which was to pay half of that rental back, which is okay, that's fine. I wanted to obviously find out how it was that this all happened without us being notified. So I went into the tribunal, got actual proof that, in fact, they did not email us. They had the wrong email address for whoever they emailed it to, and then fraudulently tried to change that while I was sitting there thinking I'm stupid enough. While I'm holding the one email, she goes upstairs, does a few things, brings me back another one. And I said, but how can this be? Because they're both incorrect emails. But what you have tried to do here is, I can see you forward it to yourself, change the email address. You still got the email wrong. And now they will not move on getting my 2,000 odd, 2,500. Look, it's not a big amount, and I'm not suggesting for a second that I can't afford it. But I am saying that what is happening at the tribunal is fraudulent, and it's going to happen to somebody that can ill afford 2,500 rand.
Okay, so I mean, that's quite an allegation to make about the tribunal, and it's always important to then get the other side of a particular story. Nathan Andreanza, as I said, the Western Cape Department of Human Settlements Director of Communications and Stakeholder Relations. Nathan, thank you very much for making the time.
Kino, good morning, and thank you very much for the opportunity you're affording us, and also thank you to all your listeners out there.
Now, while one can't brush a whole tribunal with one big brush and one experience, if what the caller says is true, then I'm worried.
No, Kino, look, let us start about what is the real role of the tribunal.
Yeah.
Ours is a very simple one. I must say to you, to all your listeners, let's be very clear that the Rental Housing Tribunal is a free service which we offer to all the citizens of this particular province.
Right.
We don't favor any particular party, whether that be the landlord or the tenant. What we want to do is to harmonize relationships between landlords and tenant.
Okay.
Now, where you have a dispute, when there's a dispute between a landlord and tenant, they come into the offices here and they lodge a complaint. And I want to just take you through the process. I think it's important listeners understand the process which we follow.
Mm.
The complaint is lodged, and that can be related to failure to refund a deposit. It can be an unlawful notice to vacate. It can be an exorbitant increase in rental. Those are the type of complaints which are normally registered with the tribunal.
Okay. Yeah. And they all seem to be in favor of the tenant. Because, yeah. No. What I'm saying is, all what the examples you raised right now are all complaints about landlords.
Then you have others, failure to provide municipal services, failure to pay to do maintenance on the property. There's an unlawful eviction. There's an illegal lockout. There's seizure of possession. There's a whole host of different complaints which we deal with. Now, I want to just say that the complaint is then lodged on our system, and we then hand it over to one of our case officers.
Right.
Those, as I said, we want to harmonize relationships. Invariably, there's something which went wrong between the two parties. Our first port of call is to mediate the dispute between the two parties.
Right.
If that fails, then it goes to a hearing. Now, what Mike said yesterday also, I want to just raise this point about the panel.
Mm.
We have a full bench of panel members who are completely and utterly independent.
Right.
Independent from the department. We have a five-member panel. You have a chairperson, deputy chair, and three other members who sit and hear hearings.
Right.
They operate Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and we hear hearings from all corners of this particular province.
Okay.
Those members, I must add, are appointed on a three-year term of office.
Okay.
And this is where I want to also deal with the issue of fairness. Because a lot of people say, do you favor a particular party? Because it's an independent panel, as the Department of Human Settlements, we don't have any interest in who the ruling is for or against. It's a matter of looking at the merits of the case and listening to both parties. I think that's very important. We must make that point to all your listeners.
Okay. And I'm glad you've made those points. But it still doesn't deal with his issue. His issue wasn't how it was adjudicated. His issue wasn't any of that. He's happy to pay the $2,500 back or whatever it was, right? His problem is that the sheriff came to knock on his door. And he says he had not received an email from the tribunal. He then went in, and when they showed him, he says, well, that's the wrong email address. Someone then came back and tried to fix something according to him on that email, and the wrong email was still there. That is the challenge, not the way the tribunal operates, because I think the tribunal is marvelous. I think what you want to do is absolutely marvelous. But when people, and I'm not saying it's exactly what happened, but I think it needs to be investigated, Nathan, when people try and potentially pull a fast one, that is something that the department needs to look at and take seriously.
Now, Kino, look, I agree with you, and certainly in terms of the case which you had on your show yesterday.
Yeah.
I went off and I had a look and pulled a file on that particular matter. And it's, I think it's very important that we don't discuss the merits of that particular case, because you want to, you're asking us to do is deal with the process following the ruling which was made in this particular matter.
Mm.
Now, that ruling, the parties attended the hearing on the 4th of September.
Right.
And the tribunal members finalized the ruling on the same day, which would have been the 4th of September. On the 5th, the ruling was dispatched to both parties. Now, it's also important to note that Mike is not an affected party. It is, in fact, his partner who is the affected party.
Okay.
But either as it may, the email which Mike talks about was duly dispatched on the 5th of September at 1:38.
Okay.
That being 22 minutes to 2.
Mm.
And immediately after, you'll know this, from a process perspective, you get a mail receipt.
Yeah.
It bounces back and it says, guess what? Your mail hasn't gone through because there is an error on that particular email address. A new email was dispatched on the 5th at 9 minutes to 2 on the same day. Now, what we want to say to all your listeners out there, mistakes do happen.
Right.
Mistakes do happen. And in the first instance, the one which was dispatched at 20 to 2 was an error. The second one at 9 minutes to 2 was not an error. And we can state it here very categorically that there was no fabrication of any email which went through.
Okay. Was the email, the second one, sent to the right person?
As far as our records reflect, Kino, and again to your listeners, we have the correct email address, and it was sent off, as I say, because Mike is not the affected party.
Mm.
It went off to his partner's email address.
And you are sure that that was the right email address?
120%.
Okay. So Mike's lying when he says that they didn't receive the email, or the email at least didn't go through to them.
Well, you see, I don't want to say that explicitly, Kino. I mean, we've got to be very careful.
Sure.
We're trying to assist, and it would not be beneficial to us.
Okay, fair enough. You know,
to now say who did what. And as I said, if we made a mistake, and I acknowledge we made a mistake at the first email, which went to the incorrect email address, we take that. Now, what Mike might have a problem with, and I think that's what he was saying in the snippet again, which you played this morning, is the conduct of the sheriff that came to visit.
Yeah.
And I think that then needs to be taken up, because there are many things one wants to do. If Mike has a problem with that, he should take that up with the SA Board of Sheriffs for them to investigate the conduct of the sheriff.
Yeah, but I think his challenge here was the way the email was dealt with and what he perceived to have been someone changing something on an email. But, I mean, you've seen what he says is the evidence, right? Have you had a look at it?
I've seen it. I've got the full transcript, everything, yeah.
Okay, so you've seen the emails that he's talking about.
Yes.
So he says the second email was still the wrong email. Are you saying it was the right email?
It was the correct email address, and I can confirm that.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we've given you an opportunity to respond to that. All I can do is, you know, raise a concern that a listener raises.
Sure.
And then obviously to get that particular response. But, you know, as far as the tribunal is concerned, you know, a lot of people feel, and we'll chat to Marlon Chevalier, coming up, property attorney at Marlon Chevalier and Associates. A lot of people feel, especially if you're a landlord, that you're the one at the distinct disadvantage. Because if a tenant doesn't want to move, I mean, I, for example, have a tenant that owed me 25,000 Rand, right? And you have to go to court to get that particular tenant out. But everything else seems to be in favor of the tenant. If the landlord tries this, that, or the other thing, ooh, they're trying to kick the tenant out. I mean, I know people, for example, who went so far as to say to the city of Cape Town, I cannot afford to pay my rates bill and my water because my tenant hasn't paid me. And that's legitimate. So they don't pay their rates bill and the water gets cut.
You know, I think I've said this, but I'll repeat again.
Mm.
I mean, our view is that the tribunal does not, and I say this again, does not advocate for any party, be that landlord, the agent involved, or the tenant.
Mm.
A complaint is lodged, and we are impartial in how we deal with it. All persons that we deal with are equal, and we cannot, at the tribunal, we cannot be seen to be taking sides.
I think my comment was more in relation to the law, not the tribunal itself.
100%.
And I understand what you're saying, and I don't think, you know, materially speaking, I don't think there was an issue with the tribunal as such. He did mention the question, why do you need to have three panelists and maybe not just one and save everybody more money? And then you would say, well, you know, you'll have contesting thoughts and ideas. And, you know, at least if there's three, it's a majority rules type thing, right? Would that be your response?
Well, look, in terms of the Act, I mean, we prescribe to have a set amount of members who hear hearings. Yeah.
Okay. So are you considering this case closed?
As far as we are concerned, yes. It is closed.
Okay, perfect. Well, Nathan Andreanse, we'll wait to hear from our guest, our listener, to see if he's happy with what's been said. But I really appreciate you making some time available for us.
Thank you very much, Kino.
And thanks for explaining to us how the tribunal works. By the way, is there a website people can go and check out?
Absolutely. Let me give you that details, and you can post it on your... we have the... It's under the Western Cape .gov.za. You go to the Department of Human Settlements, and you look for the Rental Housing Tribunal.
Okay, perfect. Well, Nathan Andreanse, thank you for your time. Western Cape Department of Human Settlements, Director of Communications and Stakeholder Relations. Now moving on to Marlon Chevalier, property attorney at Marlon Chevalier and Associates. And the big question is, what are your rights? What are your rights as a landlord? What are your rights as a tenant? Marlon, just listening to that, you know, your take as an independent sitting and listening to what just transpired?
Hi, Kino. Thanks, especially for having me on. Look, I've appeared in the tribunal a number of times for both landlords and tenants. There is a perception. It's unfortunately, you know, tenants seem to have an upper hand simply because the Rental Housing Act actually plays towards the benefit of the tenant. Mm. All that the Rental Housing Act can do is to enforce what the Rental Housing Act says.
Correct.
And, of course, what the Consumer Protection Act says. And by implication, a consumer invariably is a tenant. So if they carry it out to the extent of what the law says, it does favor the tenant. And it's going to get even worse when the Rental Housing Act is finally amended, when the act that is in place becomes law.
Why?
Just because the definition of maintenance and habitability and the criminal offences, I mean, if you take it to its absolute extreme, if a tenant currently wants to end a lease, a natural person tenant like you or I, and they give 20 business days notice, they can do so at any time subject to a reasonable cancellation penalty. That reasonable penalty is indeterminable. There are so many factors that need to be considered. But if a landlord wants to terminate the lease of a tenant, he can't. He first has to give the tenant 20 business days notice to remedy a breach. So to take that to its extent, if a tenant gets a letter of demand saying, please pay me my rental, I need to pay my bond, I can't sustain myself, the tenant can pay on the 19th business day every single month to avoid having his lease cancelled. So just that stupid anomaly has arisen as a result of the Consumer Protection Act. But the Act in itself, when the amendments come in, with more criminal offences coming in, you hypothetically can be arrested if you don't provide a property that is habitable. What's the definition of habitable? Open-ended. You know, how much space is required. So it's a litigator's dream, which is wonderful for me as a litigator, but it's going to be more difficult for landlords when that comes in. But that's a different conversation.
So I'm going to just go back to, so let's say my tenant doesn't pay.
Yes.
And I rely on that money to pay my rates. It's not illegal for me not to pay my rates and taxes, you know, and I'll think and then make an arrangement with the city. So let's say they don't pay me and I go, well, then I can't pay the city. And after a month, the city sends an order and says, well, we're going to cut your water. I'm going to be my guest, cut my water, cut my electricity. I haven't been paid by my tenant and therefore I can't pay you. That's my situation at the moment. Is it illegal for me to do that?
It actually causes two very, very interesting issues, Kino. The first one is there's nothing illegal. The only illegality would be if you decide to hypothetically cut the water to the premises.
If that you cut it, right?
If you cut it. You're not the service provider. If you take the law into your own hands, that's what we call an act of spoliation.
Yeah.
It's actually a criminal offense. You can go to jail for up to 2 years if you do that. That's in the 2007 amendment to the Rental Housing Act. For the last 12 years, people haven't realized if they turn off electricity, cut off the water, remove the front door, do anything to prevent a non-paying tenant from having enjoyment of the property, then go to jail. Mm. But to take it further, if you are unable to pay your rates as a result of not being paid your rental, and the city unilaterally decides to cut the water, that's not an issue. If you tell the city to cut the water, you could be perpetrating what we would call a spoliation. But the bigger problem to consider, Kino, is that if you don't pay, it could be a judgment against your name.
Sure.
So it's a double-edged sword. You may cause the tenant discomfort, but you could put yourself in the firing line of having your assets attached for failure to pay your rates.
So, for example, if your electricity is cut and the tenant in your apartment needs your Wi-Fi, needs your electricity because maybe they're running their business from there, and you don't pay your rates and your taxes because you can't because they haven't paid, and as long as you don't tell the city to cut it, but they cut it because you've not paid, and the tenant gets irritating, it's not your problem, is it?
No, you're not the author of that situation, Kino.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be quite rich, don't you think, for a tenant to turn around and say, well, I know I'm not paying you, but I need to run my business. Let's assume they have zoning rights to do so from a residential property, because the Rental Housing Act only pertains to residential rental properties. But if a tenant turns around and says, well, I know I'm liable to pay, but please can you make a plan for me, I would tell them where to go and how to get there. But the fact is that it depends what the lease says. As long as you do not take the law into your own hands, everything requires a court order. So, you know, a tenant may want to run a business, may want to do all these things for which he requires, Wi-Fi, electricity, etc. Then surely it's incumbent upon him to pay what is due when it's due. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, exactly. And if the city wants to Yeah, I mean, listen, there are ways and means around it. I don't want to be illegal about any of those things, but I'm just saying it's a lot cheaper maybe going that way than waiting for them to say, hey, we're going to take you to court, and then go, okay, can I make an arrangement? And maybe leave it for 2 or 3 months, and then maybe you've caused the tenant who refuses to pay you enough discomfort that they leave. But as long as you do not break the law in doing that, it is an option. But how do you protect landlords in all of this? It's difficult with a Housing Act. Some people would argue maybe it's better to just do Airbnb and not rent out your place in the first place.
Well, absolutely. But look, not every tenant is bad. I mean, the truth of the matter is if you're a speculator and you rent out properties, firstly, it's in your interest to ensure that your gearing is correct. Mm. If you are relying solely on rental to cover your bond,
yeah,
you've got a problem. And it's no defense in any court in our country to turn around and say to a judge, this is urgent because I can't pay my bond because my tenant doesn't pay. Mm. That's not a ground of urgency. What's important to realize is that you need to understand the Rental Housing Act, most importantly.
Yep.
You need to understand who your tenant is, and you need to look out for the alarm bells. But the fact of the matter is you need to have enough in stock to allow you to pay your bond and to pay the utilities in the event of a tenant not paying.
Exactly.
But also, to put them to terms, Keanu, there's a formal letter of demand that needs to go out. They need to know what they need to pay and when they need to pay it, and you need to act accordingly. So there are processes. There's no way that you can protect a landlord. No landlord is infallible. But if you flip it around, you might find a tenant who hypothetically is a wonderful tenant who pays on time all the time, but 1 month,
yeah,
pays late because he loses his job. Next thing a landlord says, well, you've breached, I'm cancelling and I'm evicting you. Who's to say that that's fair when you've had a tenant who's been loyal for all these years?
Okay. Now, Marlon, what I'm going to do, because we've run out of time for this half hour, I'm going to hand you back to Bruce. There is a question about, what exactly constitutes being a tenant. It says, my partner's son, family living here, no rental agreement, except that they buy electricity. So it's someone who's just basically squatting there. So I'm going to hand you over to Bruce. If you have the answer, I'm happy to relate that answer after our news.